The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me once again, it's James Baggett. James, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, John. How are you?
I'm very well.
Good.
That Lovely. Polite, thanks for joining us on the Car Dealer Podcast. Tune in again next week, where things will equally be quite well, I imagine. What have you been up to?
Well, we've had a good week, haven't we? We've done loads of stuff this week. On Monday, I recorded a news podcast for my Car Dealer Inspiring Leaders one, which was very, very interesting. That was with Dash Gupta, and that will be coming out, I hope, next week sometime. But that was an absolutely fascinating chat, and I very much enjoyed that. So for people who are listening and follow that series, look out for that one next week. We've been on the road a little bit, haven't we, this week, which is unusual. I've forgotten how hard it is to drive anywhere in the UK and actually how tiring it is. When you just work from home and you actually have to drive somewhere, I mean, it just, I get absolutely shattered. But anyway, we went up to Mike Brewer's house, didn't we, in the Cotswolds, and we filmed all of the cars that are category winners for the Used Car Awards, which is going to be taking place a week on Monday, which was good fun. I very much enjoyed that. Nice to see Mike and his beautiful, beautiful house. But we had a little bit of an incident, didn't we?
I don't know what you're talking about, James.
Well, okay. I'll tell our listeners what happened. John and our videographer are out with Mike on the road shooting one of the cars. They just pulled out of Mike's house. And as you've probably seen many TV programs, you have to have one car that you film out the back of. So normally that's a hatchback where you have the back of the car open and someone sat in the back with a harness on, strapped in, with a camera pointing out the back, and the other car drives behind it. But unfortunately, Warwickshire Police weren't aware of, obviously never seen people film, and they passed us, or passed John and the team as they were filming the first car, rapidly came back in full The Bill style and did some teapack maneuver in a country lane, and they pulled you over. But the best bit about it is they didn't even recognize my brother, did they? They didn't even know that he was driving, and they just got very angry with you, probably because you're wearing a beanie hat, and the Liverpudlian who was sat in the back doing the filming.
Yes, it was more aimed at Nigel. They just walked past me in the driver's seat and went, "Is this your car?" And I went, "No, it belongs to Mazda." And then they went straight for Nigel and had a go at him. So I was off scot-free, really, considering Nigel wasn't actually driving.
But Mike put it on. Mike wasn't particularly impressed, was he, with the way it had happened? Because he said he'd been filming 27 odd years and it's on the road in this way. Never happened. I mean, it was perfectly safe. There was no problems. But they clearly just didn't like the way that what they saw. But Mike put it on his social media channels on Instagram and Twitter, and it went absolutely crazy. And I think the last time I looked on his Twitter post, it had over 1 million views. This video of you being pulled over The Bill style.
Yes. Yeah, my solicitors told me to not say anything more about it, James, obviously.
Oh, okay. I won't dwell on that. But then also this week I've been out. I spent a day with a used car dealer yesterday in Somerset, which was very enjoyable. They're a kind of used car supermarket group, a smaller used car supermarket site, but they've got their own prep centre, really, really impressive prep centre. And it was just interesting to hear how they're seeing business. I mean, as we're really struggling to manage the used car prices falling, really struggling to acquire stock at the, you know, what they see as the right price and being able to prep them properly, even with their own centre. So I spent the day with them yesterday, and I recorded some video for a new upcoming project, which I won't say too much about, but I'm sure our listeners and viewers on YouTube will enjoy it when it comes out. So yes, a busy week, John. What about yourself?
Well, James, I've been doing exactly all of the things that you just said because I was also there, apart from at your dealership in
Apart from
something,
yesterday,
wherever it
where
was.
I had to film it all on myself rather than with your expert help using a GoPro and my mobile phone,
Yeah,
which is
how'd
a
that
little
work out for you?
well, it's a little bit rough and ready, but we'll see, won't we? When you edit it, you're gonna have to work
Oh,
very hard on the edit of that one, I think.
great. Well, before we move on, I do just want to address one thing, which is that the Cotswolds is not Warwickshire. Just
Is it
throwing
not?
that out there
Is it
before
not?
we move on.
Well,
You can call it the Midlands. That's fine.
Midlands.
Yeah.
I'm pretty.
Just before we get any letters. Well, I'm going to move us on and introduce our
Please
guests
do.
before we talk about police camera action again. Our guest this week is Phil Knottard, Insight and Strategy Director for Cox Automotive. Phil, lovely to have you back on. It's been a little while, hasn't it? I think it was
Yeah,
May
thank
last
you.
I saw you.
It seems a little while, but yeah, we're very quickly moving into the final weeks of the year now. So yeah, not quite as a busy week, but not quite as interesting as your week, I don't think, by any stretch.
We weren't expecting it to be that interesting, but it was reasonably exciting, I'll put it that way. Phil, nice to see you. You're very, very close to the market, very, very close to the used car market in particular. I mean, we're hearing lots of anecdotal things about what's happening out there at the moment, the fact that dealers are pretty quiet. They're saying some of them didn't even sell a car in October. Some of the dealers I'm speaking to, used car prices are seriously dropping and dropping fast. I mean, what are you seeing? And does it echo that?
Yeah, I think we knew Q4 was going to be challenging. I think we'd been forecasting that H2 was going to be a bit of a decline in terms of the market. We knew manufacturers were going to return to what we describe as a push marketplace as they start productivity starts to ramp up. They start to look at market share. They start to look at their strategy around the ZEV mandate that comes into next year. So there's a distinct disparity now between the new and the used vehicle market. If you look at the new car deals that are available, the cash backs, deposit contributions, subvented finance, you start to compare that against what is still a fairly healthy price used car market in compared to pre-pandemic prices. And you look at interest rates and start to compare the two, there is a disparity still between the new and the used car market. So we've got product coming back into the used car market at a time where demand is challenging and it has significantly slowed as we've come through the fourth quarter. But there is some strength in some areas of the market, particularly that low value sub 6K market is still performing well. There's still some good performance out there. In that sub 6,000, it's when you start getting up to the 10, 15, 20K and upwards, that's where the market seems to be challenging.
You're very good at forecasting over there at Cox Automotive, and you come up with lots of papers that are really helpful for dealers. And a lot of the people I've been talking to in the last couple of weeks are saying that they're very aware of what's happening to the market at the moment, very aware that prices are dropping, very aware they're not as busy as they would be. But they're saying, look, what's happening? What's going to happen next, James? What's going to happen in the new year? And some people I talk to say that this new car supply, probably we're going to see a little bit more pre-reg, and I'm sure we'll come on to that as we get onto our stories. How is that sort of dynamic going to affect the used car market? And do you think it's going to get better as we turn into 2024?
Yeah, I think we're going through a change point and what you might call it an inflection point where prices are coming down. There's nervousness about how far those prices will continue to come down. You're in the fourth quarter, but reality, you start to go into the new year, and you guys have seen it as I've seen it over the years. The retailers need product. They'll need to come into the new year. They'll need to get the forecourts full. They'll need product in those businesses. So they'll have to come back into the market at some point and start to buy. The point is when that does start to come, whether it's going to be mid-December, back end of December, or even into the early part of January. So, and the reality is that we've still got a shortage of good quality 0 to 3 year old vehicles. Although at the minute it doesn't feel like that because of the demand being down. But as we move into the new year, the minute we start getting any kind of reasonable recovery in demand, we'll start to see the signs where the reality of shortage of products is back in again. We are going through this change point. But yeah, I think we've got to be careful of how we reflect what is going on now, that prices do need to come down. As I said earlier, you know, some of these prices are still significantly higher than they were pre-pandemic. So, you know, even though we are coming down quite heavily, you know, when you start to look at the leasing contract tire sector, a lot of those cars, those residual values were set pre-pandemic. You know, so they've not reflected their residual values based on the bounce back of the pandemic that we saw in used car values. So, you know, we'll start to see that as we go into the new year. And we forecast a slight uplift for used cars next year and a slight uplift for new cars next year as well. But I think we're still going through a lot of change in 2024. 2024 is going to be a key point of change for the sector.
So on that point of a slight uplift in pricing, does that include what we've just seen? I mean, because from the people I've been talking to, the crash, I'm going to call it a crash because it is considerable in last month and this month. I mean, we're talking 10% price drop when it comes to cap HPI. It seems to me that wasn't foreseen quite as much as some people would like to think. What do you think? What was that predict? Has that taken the market a little bit by surprise, quite how quickly it's dropped in the last couple of months?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's probably been, I think generally, I mean, I've been talking internally across the business, you know, we've seen the weakness coming from at least May of this year. You know, the values have been dropping at least 1.5, 1.6% above pre-pandemic averages, at least since May of this year. And I think, you know, it's now at the point that movement that we saw through October into November took the market by shock and, you know, by surprise in terms of the significance of that movement. And it's continued, as you say, James, straight into November, that continuation. And that tends to be a bounce back. You know, the market sees a movement and you quoted cap HPI at minus 4.2% at the 3-year 60 benchmark. You know, that will create waves across the sector, which then creates nervousness. It will create caution. People will be cautionary buying at the minute. There'll be dealers that will be on buying bans or restriction buying bans at the minute. Yeah. And that will be creating a problem because at the point where we're back into a push market and the manufacturers are going back into the leasing, contract tire and rental sector, that are then creating a defleet at a time where retailers are on buying bans or restrictions or cautionary buying, that starts to put pressure on. So, you know, I think it's going to be painful. I think it'll be painful until at least the end of this month, and then we'll have to see what happens going into December. But, you know, as I say, the reality is, you know, these retailers, they'll have stock at pre-drop prices that they'll need to retail the way through. They'll need to buy fresh stock at the new price to work out that profitability and manage through it. And they'll have to get through to new levels and stock levels for the new price moving forward.
There's a lot of people I'm talking to are washing through their stock at the moment and taking the pain, really, of those drops over the last couple of months and starting to try and restock up at the lower prices. What the point you made there about the buying bank, I mean, I've heard that from a number of dealer groups I've spoken to. Heard it again from this used car supermarket I visited yesterday. I take it you're hearing the same thing then. And if you are hearing it, how does that affect the market? Is it going to push prices down even further?
You could see a continuation of this pressure. I think, you know, I think we saw there's been more pressure in the first week of November. It started to ease off through the second week because that initial shock starts to slow down a little bit. We're starting already to see some of the buyers come back into the market, start to test the market out. You know, you've got to be very careful. That headline figure doesn't reflect everything. I mean, there is some sectors, there's some manufacturers, there's some specific model derivatives that are going a lot heavier than the overall average. But there are some that are stronger. You know, it's not right across every single make, model, and derivatives. So, you know, there is some opportunities out there, but I think, you know, we've just got to be eyes wide open. It is remain calm. I think the key message is remain calm, because what you don't want is this continual panic, because that will continually drive down the market. And then the risk is you end up chasing the market back up again when the retailers start to try and find products and start to bid and sort of push product. Now, it doesn't take many of the larger groups to come back into the market, start to build that activity again. You know, your larger groups such as your Al Clarks and people like that, for them to suddenly switch on and to come back in heavily buying, that soon turns the market very, very quickly. So I think we've just got to keep an eye on it on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis as we get towards the end of the year, because they could come very quickly to start to stock up for that Q1. Because you and I know Q1 is a key quarter for the retailers. You know, they come into the new year, they've got to get out of the blocks very quickly, they've got to get some revenue into that first quarter, and, you know, they can't do that just sat holding on reduced stock levels. So they'll need product.
Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting what happens over the next few weeks towards the end of this year. I had a little catch up with Darren earlier this week on the phone, not for a video, Darren from Cap HBI, and he said that November is looking very similar in terms of overall drop to what we saw in October. We've got a proper catch up with his team next week, which will be bringing readers on the website. But then what happens in December? December's notoriously quiet anyway. And like you say, people need to stock back up for January. So I think we're into a crucial couple of months, aren't we, really?
Yeah, and it's going to be key, because I think if too many people wait until January and then come out in January, and, you know, January is always an interesting one because it's very much weather dependent. You know, if we come into the new year and we've got heavy forecast of snow, then that starts to change the dynamic. But assuming that, you know, we're not getting any adverse severe weather conditions, if the retailers wait until January and all start to come back in to start to chase stock, then that's where we might start to see this bounce back of some of these values start to push back up again. Because, as I said earlier, you know, that 3-year-old ready to retail mainstream, but it's not heavily there in volumes. You know, the volume is in the 4-year-old higher mileage stuff at the minute. You know, that's where the product is because of the leasing contract extensions and things like Motability and things like that. So, you know, that 0-12, 0-24, 0-36 market is still in a normal demand market, is still low supplied because of the production cuts over the last 3-4 years.
And then we're 3 years next year, aren't we, from the pandemic? And then there's that huge shortage of new car supply, which is obviously now 3-year-old cars coming back from PCPs, et cetera, that are not actually going to be there. So yeah. I can see why firms such as yourself are forecasting a slight bump in prices. But I'm just going to rewind back to what Dermot Kelleher said to us last week from Haycar about new car, because there are some, and you've mentioned it there are some very strong new car offers out there, aren't there? And actually,
James, don't you dare start talking about the stories in the intro. That is against the rules.
Have I done that? No. Okay.
You're about to.
All I wanted to say, let me just finish my point. I just think with that return of very strong retail offers for the new car market, that is going to put pressure on the used car market, isn't it? Without doubt.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, conscious not to get into some of the stories, but the reality is, you know, the manufacturers have got products on the ground. They need to get it registered. Now, whether it's registered because it's there and it's, you know, on the ground and it needs taxing in this year, whether it's to do with chasing market share to you know, recover the market share in each of the markets by the end of the year, whether it's to do with the ZEV mandate, trying to get these vehicles registered this year to try and help them in terms of their ZEV mandate target of next year. There are strong deals in the new vehicle market. You only need to look at some of those deposits, cashbacks, subvented finance, as I mentioned earlier. But that at the same time, as I said, you know, that is creating, because if the retail demand isn't there, which is the market they're trying to chase, because that's the most profitable market for the manufacturers, they're also doing the deals with the leasing contract hire firms to try and get products into those that they starved through the pandemic. You know, let's kid ourselves, you know, leasing rental sector was not the market for the manufacturers through the pandemic when production was down. That's now starting to turn back on. They're now trying to do those deals. And that's where we're getting this generation of defleets into the market. So, you know, I think it's going to take a little bit of time in terms of where the used vehicle values start to realign themselves. And I think we've, again, got to be very careful, because this is going to be very much manufacturer and model specific and fuel type specific is what we're starting to see, You know, they say, you know, if you speak to Darren at Kappa HPI, you look at it of where those, you know, strong, healthy movements are compared to, you know, some of that revaluation of that market. It's it's very detailed at the minute. And we always say, you know, with Darren and I, it's always devil in the detail more than ever at the minute.
Yeah. Fascinating at the moment. Absolutely fascinating. Well, thank you very much for that market insight update for us, Phil. I really appreciate that. John, before I steal all of the stories, probably best that we move on, do you think?
Yes. If you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, though we can guess. And we're going to have a chat about each one as we go through. At the end, Phil gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can X at Car Dealer Mag if X is working on this particular day, and let us know if you think we've missed anything. James annoyingly won last week, so he's going to start and probably talk about exactly what we've just talked about.
No, I'm not. I'm going to talk about something else, actually. I'll let you do that. No, I'm going to pick the news that we published yesterday from Motorway about two new product launches. And the reason I've picked this one, I know this is a little bit of a puff piece for Motorway, but actually I just thought these two new product launches for them were incredibly innovative and actually really interesting to the motor trade. So
in checks case in you missed post, it, James.
Sorry, checks in the checks post. In the yeah, post. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Motorway. So the first one is called Motorway Trade. And what the firm's going to do is allow dealers to sell their cars to each other via the Motorway platform using the technology that they've already set up for consumers. So for people who buy on Motorway, they know that these the cars that are listed are incredibly detailed, loads of pictures, and they use some AI technology to make sure that it's all filled in correctly and works and looks at its best, so that those consumers get the best price. And now this is going to mean that the dealers are going to be able to do that. The same with trade vehicles. So I thought that was a clever idea. I had an interview with Tom Leith, who's the CEO of Motorway, for our YouTube channel, and he told me that this was the most requested thing that Motorway customers had asked for, and they've now decided to bring it into fruition. But the one that I thought was even more interesting is this product they're calling Motorway Instant Match. And what this does is, if you buy a car from the Motorway platform, they can instantly tell you how many consumers are out there interested in buying that vehicle. And it's not just a number. These are actual genuine leads for people who want to buy that exact model, make a model specification that dealer's buying. So they can decide that, for example, that if they find a BMW X5 on the site that they like the look of, they can see at the same time that there's actually 10 people who want to buy it. And if they work their calculations out, you know, maybe 1 in 10 or 2 in 10 leads will convert, and Motorway will provide those leads to them once they've picked up that vehicle. So what Motorway are effectively trying to do is shorten the amount of time dealers have to keep these cars in stock, because they can instantly contact that lead once they've picked it up and try and sell them that vehicle. And I asked them during that video why aren't they doing this themselves? You know, so if you've got the leads on one side and you've got the product over here, you know, you're effectively a dealer, aren't you, at that point? But they were very adamant that that is not in their business plan whatsoever. They do not want to cut out dealers. They are a marketplace for dealers, and they want to connect those two demands, the demand from the consumers with the supply from the consumers, and the dealer is the person in the middle that does the deal. But I just, I mean, we obviously, John, went up there, didn't we, and filmed a documentary video about Motorway's launch, I think back end of last year, probably around this time last year. And it's a really interesting story, a disruptor that's come into the market, and they've clearly stolen a lot of market share. And I think with a couple of ideas like this, they're probably going to do a little bit more of it. So I just thought, I wouldn't normally pick a supplier news story to start with, but I just thought these two ideas were fascinating, and judging by the amount of people who watched the video and read the story yesterday, clearly the dealers are interested in it too. What do you think?
It's interesting how these tech platforms add more and more features to almost, and I don't want to undo the brilliance of Motorway and the brilliance of CarWow, but they almost become very similar to each other, don't they? Is in that Motorway started as a sell your car to car dealers, type platform. CarWow started as a buy your car from car dealers type platform, and now they both sort of have slightly taken a bit of each other's idea, and you could do both on each platform now, can't you? I do think it's interesting that they were quite adamant that they are not interested in doing anything to do with the cars themselves. They just want to be a middleman, and you can absolutely understand that, and I think that's a sensible place to be. I think it's know what you're best at and keep doing that. And from their point of view, you know, they've probably sat back and watched other companies in the marketplace, shall we say, try this and not really succeed, or succeed but not perhaps to the best of their ability, and have thought, that looks a little bit difficult, I don't think we're going to get involved in that. They're much happier placed on the outside of it as a middleman, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I just thought they were a couple of innovative features that I thought were very interesting. Phil, it's probably a little bit unfair of us to ask for your comments on this story, unless, you, of course, you want to give them.
Yeah, I'd better not, James.
Push that one to one side. That's fine. Let's move on, John. You go for yours.
Lovely. Well, as you can predict, I am going to start with a story from Cox Automotive.
Hurry a bit of favour,
get it in early. So manufacturers are starting tactical registrations once again, says analysts from Cox Automotive. In fact, they've said that it's undeniably returning to a push market after years of short supply from COVID pandemics and so on. Well, that's strong words there. I mean, I could go through this story, but since we have the man quoted in it, it's still, you might be better talk
about you're making it very difficult for me to choose stories today, aren't you? You've given me one that I shouldn't really comment on, and how I pick and choose that, and then
it's
you've
not like I want to lose
my own insight report output as well, and I obviously can't really choose that as the most
well
the best
sure
one.
Sure, but we can talk about it.
We've recently, you know, we're on our fifth annual insight report, as you know, where we predict the forecasts of new and used vehicle marketplaces, and that subsequently this year we looked at the future retail landscape, and we looked at the sustainability in the market. But you know, in reality, we, you know, looking at that new car market, as we touched on before, you know, we pre-reg is not new to the sector, whether it's tactical registrations, whether it's pre-reg. You know, we've been around long enough now that we saw what it was like in 2008, 2009, and when, you know, cheap finance and productivity spiked, and it was a significantly push market. Through the, you know, as we were going in towards the pandemic, 2018, 2019, pre-reg activity was starting to slow down. I think, you know, car dealer probably reported on it a few times where, you know, the dealers just didn't have the appetite for doing these pre-reg tactical because they didn't want to spend the money. It was, you know, use their cash, use their capital. But I think now at the minute, you know, there's a big appetite. There's a lot of stock on the ground. The manufacturers need to, as I said earlier, move that stock. And although even through a bit of the pandemic last year recovery, you know, we did see glimpses of tactical pre-reg activity. Now, whether that was done within the manufacturer's space, so purely B2B in their own name, or whether it's done through the retail dealer network, or whether it is done through the leasing contract hire sector, we are now starting to see those kind of deals start to return, which, again, you know, we know that manufacturers, they built the car, it's left the factory, it's on some kind of funding scheme, it needs to be registered. Now, in one way, it's positive because they end up in the used vehicle park, however they've registered new. Some consumers get good deals. It gives retailers opportunity on some deals, but it starts to distort the reality of the market in terms of performance because you start to see the new vehicle registrations and then it gets registered in the next user when they buy that vehicle from the retailer or wherever they buy that vehicle from, and it gets registered again. So you see it as a used vehicle transaction. So you start to see dynamics play out in the data a little bit more than you would have done before. So the reality is we're going to see it. We'll probably see it all the way till the year end. You know, it happened in September. It happened again in October. no doubt we'll probably see a spike at the end of November in that last minute activity. The phone calls start to take place and the deals take place there as well. So it's not new, just returning to it.
Who's doing it?
Now, you don't really want me to answer that one, Mr. Barrett.
Well, no, I really do. Yeah, I'm just like, if, we're, like,
if, the, we, what if we say something, that... can you just nod?
Yeah, I think right, get the SMMT list up.
I think, you know, I think if you start to think about, you know, who some of the manufacturers that may have been struggling in terms of market share, some of those manufacturers that, you know, you'll see their market share in the SMMT numbers bounce at the end of the month. If you look through some of the auto retail new vehicle activity in terms of that deposit contribution, you know, they do stand out. You know, they've got some product, whether that's, you know, some of those European manufacturers that have got several brands that may have been struggling with some of those brands in recent years. You know, they'll need to get them registered. And they'll need to get those vehicles on the road and taxed.
How much of it is EV, this product that's being pushed?
Some will be EV. I mean, you know, we're hearing that EV discounts has started to accelerate now, particularly in the UK and Europe. You know, we've been seeing a period where EV penetration started to increase, and then the 2030-35 deadline debate came out and the ZEV mandate at the same time, and you know, consumers then start to think, oh, I've got another 5 years before I transition to EV. At a time where the manufacturers need to start to ramp that up a little bit. So yeah, there will be probably some tactical pre-reg activity around EVs by certain OEMs. And you know, when you start to see, when you see some of the cap HPI movements at the end of the month, which I no doubt Darren will run you through of the sort of the winners and losers, those are probably the ones that have been really pumping that product heavily into the market, and that's where the pain will start to be seen.
There's quite a few, as you've pointed out, used car dealerships that sort of rely on this, though, isn't there? There's some of these big groups. Like,
well, and many have been struggling in the last.
And they have been struggling. Yeah, they've really been struggling because they haven't had that supply. So I suppose in some ways it is a good thing for them. But the thing that worries me is this: it puts dealers back on that drug, doesn't it? And pre-regs can be very, very painful for them, because if they're forced to register these cars to hit a target, they've then got to sell those used cars before they can start selling the new ones, and it unfortunately does cause problems, and we've seen that in the past. Do you think there is danger of us getting back into that difficult situation that is painful for dealers?
There is, but I think, you know, some of this activity now is being done at pure manufacturer level. You know, it isn't necessarily moving the vehicles through the dealer network. It is their registrations, they'll be taking the pain on it. I mean, you know, we're moving into 2024, which we'll start to see a lot more of the transition to agency from an OEM perspective, or a type of agency, let's put it that way, you know, not necessarily pure agency. And, you know, some of those manufacturers will still be looking at how they can do these deals, how they can get those vehicles on the road and registered. And sometimes to a consumer, do you know what? I can see a car. It's a new car by all accounts, and I can have it there and then. I can have it that day, I can have it the day after, and I can see it, I can touch it, I can feel it, and I can drive it away. I don't have to wait 2, 3, 4 months for that vehicle to arrive. So in some ways, as you say, James, you know, there are dealer groups that do very, very well out of those kind of opportunities, because they can do them in bulk, they can advertise them, and they can get the vehicles very quickly into consumers and on the road.
Bill, you mentioned there those manufacturers that are doing selling via agency, and they used to be able to lean on their dealer network and say, we need you to register X number of cars and sell them on your forecourt as used. They clearly can't do that now. I mean, Mercedes, Volvo have already gone agency this year. How did they get product into the market under a pre-reg agreement? I mean, do they have to push it into that leasing world? Is that what they're doing?
No. I mean, they're still doing as self-registrations. I mean, at the end of the day, it's purely, you know, we talk about pre-reg, you know, those vehicles can be registered in the manufacturer's name.
But they get penalised for that, though, don't they? They do get penalised. They get penalised for that.
No, they've got a 3 month. I mean, there's the 3 month window that essentially under the tactical registration or pre-registration regulation in many ways is they're meant to be a 3 month window between registering it and being able to then resell it. Of which, you know, previously that was kind of put through demonstrator systems and courtesy car systems and things like that. So, you know, unfortunately, all we see is it's registered through either fleet or business, because it depends on the registration code as to whether it goes into fleet or business. So, you know, I think generally from an agency model, it's very early to say on the agency model, but I think clearly what we are starting to see around agency model is the reality that the relationship between the retailer and the OEM has to be tighter, and it has to be a closer working relationship. So I think what you will start to see, and you know, you mentioned some of the earlier ones, the manufacturer that went early with agency this year, you only need to go to their forecourts and there's already significant discounts, significant activity starting to play out where they're trying to get those vehicles registered onto the market. Some of those will be done as tactical pre-reg self-registrations to get those vehicles registered.
And on that front, I mean, we've covered the pain that Mercedes has felt throughout this year. I mean, it's not been an easy transition for them. And you have seen it in their market share issues. Have they got to just push through this pain and continue? Or do you think, I mean, I'm picking on Mercedes because I'm one of the first, but do you think we're going to go back to a normal, and I use inverted commas, a dealer style agreement for some of these manufacturers in the future?
I think what we will start to see is the more hybrid model between a franchise agreement and what you would class as an agency. I think, you know, I think clearly having a pure agency is the way you would understand agency, which is, you know, everything is capitalized onto the manufacturer and the dealer just gets a commission. I think we'll start to see this hybrid model. We call it a dealer 2.0. It's not either a full agency, it's not necessarily a franchise agreement. The manufacturer has responsibilities in terms of transparency of pricing, consistency of pricing, but they understand the role that the dealer plays within all of this. They need the dealer because they know the market, they know their territory, they know how to sell, sell cars. So I think we'll start to see that play out. I think, you know, without talking too much about Mercedes probably made a decision to go early. That allows them to go through the transition. It allows them to understand the challenges that it was going to impact on them. And they're probably just going through that pain point. And some of the other manufacturers have got to go through what Mercedes may have already started to experience this year already, but they'll work through it. You know, they'll find the way through it, and they'll come out the other side. I think, you know, we've got to be very careful that we don't make too many early assumptions that an agency is a good or bad thing. You know, this is all about long-term relationship between OEM and consumer, and consistency of pricing as we start to transition into connected vehicles, electrification of the sector, and the way all this, whether that's over-the-air updates, whether that's subscription, however that starts to play out, there's a bigger strategic plan at play at the OEM level with all of this.
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights. Right, let me move. I did have that on my list, which I just want to make sure I wedge in there so when Phil comes to do his scoring at the end, I did have it on my list, but John has stolen it. But no, let me move us on to another story, which sort of kind of ties in. And this is a news that came out this morning that Hyundai are going to become... You've got this one, John?
Maybe.
Hyundai can become the first brand to sell vehicles on Amazon as they announced the partnership at the LA Auto Show yesterday. So this is their plan to sell their cars via Amazon, which I think will be fascinating to see how this works. I've already had many witty comments on my social media, especially on Twitter, about people saying how big is the box going to be? Where are they going to leave that behind the bins?
Well, it didn't help they parked a big box on stage.
Yes. Doubles up as a garage. Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, a very interesting move. This is one that we've been expecting for some time, isn't it? I mean, Amazon has got an incredible platform. They're very good at displaying products. They're very good at retailing these products. And if anybody knows how to do things differently, it is them. Hyundai being the first brand that are going to test this. And it is obviously in an agency style agreement, I assume. And it's going to start in the US, but there's no word yet whether it's going to come to the UK. But I wouldn't be surprised if it is successful over there. Amazon is a global business and they'll start pushing this out elsewhere. The things for me that I find fascinating is who's going to follow them next. Hyundai and Kia, sister firms. I mean, it would make sense that Kia would follow them very, very closely. And who else is going to start selling their cars on Amazon? What were your thoughts on this, John? You picked this story too, but I think this is a groundbreaking move for the automotive industry.
I'm not quite that excited about it. I think it's interesting. I was a little bit, I don't want to pour cold water all over it, because I think it, for Hyundai, it's possibly quite a good thing. The way that it seems to work is, when you say buying cars through Amazon, what I expect is that Amazon, in a big warehouse somewhere, have 3,000 Hyundai Santa Fes, and they're ready to dispatch them at any given time across the nation or whatever. That's not how this works. I think Amazon realized that's not really going to work in this circumstance. So how it works is, effectively, it's like a stock checker for the local Hyundai dealer network, in a way, isn't it? So because America works in a slightly different way to us, doesn't it, in that they like to have hundreds of these new cars in stock, and you can just find one that is closest to what you would like in terms of color and spec and all that, and you can turn up and buy one. So it's effectively like you go onto Amazon, you go, I want a Santa Fe, I want it to be green, I want it to have aircon and whatever, and it will go, right, here's one in Chicago, here's one in another place in Illinois that I can't think of a name of, and you then buy it through Amazon, but effectively you are buying it in sort of in partnership with the dealer. We haven't really got the details of how that works, but fundamentally the dealer is the one that has it in stock, and the dealer delivers it to you, or you go and get it from the dealer. So the dealer is still quite involved in this whole process. So it's not quite the groundbreaking story, in that Amazon isn't suddenly turning into Jam Jar Cars.
But they could do it. That's the important thing, especially in America. There's nothing to stop them having that huge stock. I mean, as you say, you walk into a dealership in America. I've walked into
America's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think actually what would stop them in America, what would stop Amazon from doing that in America, is they would have to sort of become a dealer, wouldn't they? Because America is very funny about, well, a lot of states in America are very funny about direct-to-consumer sales. This is why dealers are so prevalent almost.
But one of the things that came out of this story is that shares in Carvana, CarMax, and AutoNation, that largest dealer group in America, have fallen 8%.
Yeah, and I didn't quite understand that, because I think to frame that as Amazon is the new car dealer is looking at it completely wrong, because car dealers are still heavily involved in this, is my view. Amazon is purely going to be like an Auto Trader or a Car Wow. It's another place to go and buy your new car. For me, it's more worrying for any new car platforms in the US that Amazon is coming on and going, right, here we go, we can do this now as well, because it's a familiar name to buy a car from, even if they're not really that involved. I mean, my question with it is, how much does, it's a new car, isn't it? So the warranty is slightly less of a concern anyway, because you deal with Hyundai instead of Amazon and so on. But who are you actually buying it from? Are you buying it from Amazon? Are you buying it from your local Hyundai dealer, and Amazon's just giving you a sort of referral link? What is the process involved in this? That's
they
my question.
Haven't been too clear on it, have they?
Yeah. No.
Phil, what was your take on this?
I think there's two points with it. Is I think, and I get both of your views on it, you know, and it's whether you look at it the here and now, the short term, what does it mean today, or you think about, you know, what could this be in the future. Now, we've talked, you know, Amazon has been rumored for a long, long time about their entrance into the aftermarket of the car set on an automotive sector. And then obviously, what would they do if they start to move into that new and used vehicle marketplace? I think the first bit of this is that, you know, think about it in terms of accessibility. You know, this is about, to James's point, opening up to the Amazon customer, the Amazon database, you know, is huge. And, you know, there will be, and, you know, online buying, online sales in the US is very, very low. It's, I think it's even lower than it is in the UK and across Europe. So, you know, online, pure online purchasing in the US is very, very minimal. And to your point, John, you know, dealers tend to dominate over there rather than manufacturers, unlike across Europe and the UK for now. Under, you know, normal agreements, whether that will change, we'll see. But I think the question with this is where is this starting to head? You know, is it going to be that as we move into more and more agency type agreements and the OEM takes more control over the pricing and that customer relationship, is it that we're going to see more of this from OEMs through platforms such as Amazon, which is about accessibility, about ease, about simplicity? It's that whole e-commerce. You know, they're already talking about payment and financing functionality through Amazon. So you can do everything on Amazon. You know, I don't think, you know, all the stuff that's come out since this, well, you know, I'm going to on my Amazon Prime, will I be able to get a car, you know, get it delivered this afternoon, all that stuff. Mm. This is about accessibility and simplicity and efficiency. You know, for the consumer to be able to go onto something like Amazon, have the choice, whether that's through the network, have that payment facility and the ease. I think that's where we've got to have our eyes wide open with this one, because it's kind of a taste of what could be coming. And that relationship between the consumer and the OEM. And, you know, it still needs the network. I mean, we just talked to death about agency model before. And, you know, we already know now, you know, you look at the, look at Polestar, for argument's sake, you know, they've gone from a pure online to now working with their dealer network because they need that physical infrastructure. This won't be any different. It'll need a physical infrastructure. It'll need that touch point for, you know, you order a Hyundai, it might get delivered, but actually you might want to collect it. Well, where are you going to collect it from? What if you have a problem with it, et cetera, et cetera? So it'll still need that network, but this is about access to consumer, I think, in the first instance.
I can't remember if this was my story or yours. We've spoken about it so much, John.
It's yours. I
think it's my, well, over to you then.
Lovely. Okay. I shall talk about you, Les, which we haven't talked about for a little while. A little nib of a story, which is there's apparently not much evidence, says Auto Trader, that part exchange non-compliant used car stock is heading north after the ULEZ expansion. So when ULEZ kicked in August, there was a lot of talk of, right, what do we do with all this non-compliant ULEZ stock? Get rid of it. We don't want to sell it anywhere near London, understandably, because lots of people buying near London do have to drive into London or near London. So there was talk of it disappearing up into, I don't know, you know, anywhere 100 miles away from London that didn't have anything to do with ULEZ. But according to Auto Trader, this isn't really happening. So the example they give is in the East Midlands, where I live, it was 10% of dealer stock in this particular, in, I can't remember when this month is, but I think it was in October. In October, it was 10% of dealer stock was non-compliant stuff. And that's down from 16% in 2021. So far from going up, it's actually gone down, the amount of ULEZ non-compliance stuff across non-London bits of the country. My question is, where's it all going then? It must be going somewhere. I mean, there are still dealers who've been, you know, making use of this, haven't they? You know, more rural dealerships we ran a story on. Yeah, I just a bit of a mystery as to where it's all going. They can't all be scrapped. What do you think?
No, I just wonder whether some of these cars maybe have got a little bit older from that. They were comparing it to 2021.
It's true, yeah.
I just wonder whether some of them naturally disappeared out of the market. But I mean, we've spoken to several dealers, and you just rightly pointed out, we ran a feature, didn't we, about these specialist dealers who have been targeting those cars, especially for rural areas, targeting those cars that were non-compliant in London especially, and making hay off the back of it. So I think there are some, but that, you know, maybe that's just anecdotal. Phil, what do you think? I mean, what's your take on this?
I mean, you're looking at what, 2007 for petrol, 2015 for diesel. You know, I think at the minute, as we said ages ago on this call, that, you know, that sub 6K is a very strong market at the minute. And a lot of this product will be falling into that lower priced market. So I think it's going to be very difficult to identify a clear strength and weakness around it with what's going on in terms of prices at the minute. You know, dealers now are geographic, you know, the B2B movements and you know, auctions and things like this. You know, we try looking at it within the businesses to see where the strength and weakness was, and it was very difficult to really identify that ULEZ compliant or non-compliant stock in terms of its strength and weakness, because, you know, whether we're moving into places like Colchester or further up north and things like this, that, you know, nowadays, you know, the dealers are looking geographically, you know, UK-wide, buyers are looking UK-wide, etc. So I think it'd be very difficult to identify it. And, you know, reality is, you do feel that 2007 or 2015 car is quite old, but actually, you know, there's still a lot of them on the road, and still they're not dead, are they? They're, you know, it's still a good profit opportunity. So I don't know. I think it's still early. I think the challenge is going to be, as other areas start to move on this and you start to narrow the opportunities down and where that product can go. But by that point, we'll be in Euro 7 and things like this. So things will have moved on significantly. So I don't know. I think there might be pockets of slight strength and weakness, but I don't think there's going to be a clear picture on it.
Well, thank you for that. I am going to finish my list of stories on a happy note, John. And who doesn't love a refund from a government agency? And this time we're talking about the DVLA, who have shelled out this week, or the last couple of weeks, £1.1 million to 58,000 trade plate holders all over the UK who had been overcharged. No. it wasn't quite that much. I mean, there would be a lot of happy traders out there. I mean, the motor trade would now no longer exist, wouldn't it, if that had been the case? No, they only got 20 quid, which is enough to buy them a bacon sandwich and a cup of tea. But yeah, this is off the back of a error in relation to the cost of a 12-month trade license. License holders were overcharged £5 in duty in 21-22 and £15 in 22-23. So the DVLA has spotted this, seen that they've got an extra £1.1 million in their bank account, and decided to hand it back. So it's been, since we published this story, which has been incredibly popular on our website, funnily enough, I've seen on our LinkedIn especially, lots of people saying, yeah, I got mine. They took great pleasure in banking checks from the DVLA rather than sending them one. So yeah, I just thought it was absolutely fascinating that this had happened, and that cash was being doled out by the government to lots of happy traders this week. No comments, John?
I have nothing to add on that.
I've got nothing to add.
Yeah. Quite frankly, yeah. Shall I squeeze in one more?
You can. That's my last story.
I've got to choose between two. I am going to end on Auto Trader and their reservation tool. So, yeah. So Auto Trader have been beta testing a reservation tool on their platform. But of course, it's only been open, as beta tests often are, it's only been open to a certain number of customers. So that's been hit with a little bit of backlash from dealers, because a very small proportion were in this beta testing program. And understandably, they got a bit frustrated that when they go on and look to see if their stock for used VW Golf is on there or whatever, by ticking this, only show me ones that offer a reserve option, suddenly their listing disappears, and it jumps down to a fraction of the number. We had a chat with Catherine Fairs from Auto Trader about this, and you know, she was saying, well, we're always open to having more people in the beta testing program. And of course, it won't be a beta test forever. It will, if it's successful, it will be rolled out and so on, and everyone will be involved. But this is just a bit of news that they are opening up the tool testing now, so more people can go on and get involved in it. But what this basically does is you can, as the name suggests, reserve a car through Auto Trader is the idea. Right. So it's much like you get on many dealer websites where you can pay £99 as a holding deposit, and that stops that car being sold to anyone else temporarily, as long as you then go and actually look at it or buy it or whatever. But there was a little bit of argy-bargy, wasn't there, as to, well, who's getting this £99 and all this sort of stuff.
From I think people traders, were more annoyed about the fact they weren't, that not everybody was included. I don't think they
dislike
the idea.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's the nature of a beta test, isn't it? To roll it out to every, in Auto Trader's defense, to roll it out to every single dealer would be quite, not quite difficult, but perhaps that's not really what you do in a beta test. You want to make sure it all works first, don't you, on a limited number. Yeah. So it has been further rolled out now. So I think they're after getting more people involved in it. But I just wanted to talk about the feature itself. I thought that was quite a yeah. good thing. And actually, I'm surprised it took this long in a way to get this idea off the ground.
In terms of qualifying a lead, I mean, that is a very solid buying intention, isn't it? If someone's willing to put a £99 deposit down, I'm not even sure it's refundable, but if
it is refundable, yeah, I think
it would be even stronger, wouldn't it? But it shows that person genuinely wants it. And I suppose if I was a dealer and I got sent through a lead from Auto Trader saying this person's put a £99 deposit down on your car, you'd be like, well, actually, this person's obviously very serious. And be pretty excited about it. So I think, as I've said, I think more dealers were probably annoyed that they weren't included rather than the fact that the idea exists in the first place.
It's quite, I mean, this is a relatively new thing to the market in general, isn't it? I mean, I say that. I think lots of dealer groups have had things like this for a little while. But to roll it out across a platform like Auto Trader is quite good, because I think if you're a small dealer and you cannot, it sounds like a puff piece for Auto Trader, but if you can't afford to put together all the IT infrastructure involved in putting this on your own website, I think why not have it through Auto Trader?
Yeah. Bill, any comments on that one?
I think to your point, James, I think the pushback has probably been the fact that why it's been done through limited dealers, but to John's point, you know, you can't roll out something like this and do it to the entire network. And, you know, but I think the big thing with this is going to be, where does the trust lie in terms of the consumer? Is it those that are going onto Auto Trader? You know, do they trust that they're going to leave this £99 deposit with somebody like Auto Trader rather than the dealers? Now, you know, someone like the large dealer groups who will have this functionality, they may not see the benefit because they may have a strong enough brand anyway that people will trust them to leave a £99 reserve deposit and hold that vehicle. Whereas your smaller independent dealers that may not have that strong consumer brand, or the consumer might not trust to sort of do that on their website, this might start to benefit them because the trust is there with Auto Trader. They're doing this with Auto Trader, which, you know, I think that's where probably Auto Trader has seen the benefit with this. That, you know, I think it's going to be a case that, you know, consumers decide they're going to go on Auto Trader and search for a car. They've trusted Auto Trader to do that, and therefore Auto Trader's given this functionality to reserve that vehicle with a £99 deposit. And I think it's a great idea. I think it was probably, to your point, John, it was inevitable. It was probably going to come. I think I'm surprised it didn't come sooner, particularly in the early days of the pandemic with lockdowns and everything going on to online. But I think it's positive that it's happened. I think knowing Auto Trader, once they can prove that it does work and the benefit and the numbers of people reserving, then the rollout will probably be fairly swift, and the opt-ins for the dealers will be fairly swift as well.
Well, I'm out of stories, John.
Lovely. I'm also out of stories. So, Phil, before we ask for your verdict, are there any stories you think we've missed?
Without going into puff stories, no. We'll keep away from that one, because I think we've done some desperate stories here, and probably to your point, enough stories, haven't we?
But, are you saying it's been a quiet week for us on the website?
And we'll stay away from the Volkswagen Group agrees exclusive EV deals with the Vatican, because that might take us all down a
Well, definitely.
I'm sure that's
I have no way I'm touching that one.
Yeah.
We'll keep away from that one because we don't know what direction that will take us down at all. So, no, we'll stay away from that one.
I mean, is that a deal of over, like, 4 EVs or something? Because how big is the Vatican?
John, we said stay away from it.
Fine. All right. I'm going to have to ask you then, Phil, who do you think is the winner?
I'm going to go for the most obscure one, which is going to be the DVLA £20 one.
Yes.
And I think the reason for that is I can't go for the first one for obvious reasons. I think going for mine would be wrong. The auto trader.
So right. It would be so right. Just, you know.
And I think this, it isn't the money. This is, if you look through the decades of the problems that DVLA have caused the retail dealer network, and particularly independents, whether that's through paperwork, cherished transfers, transitions to digital, all this, the fact that they've admitted the problem, it's not necessarily the value of the problem of the 1.5 million, the fact that they've fessed up to it, shall we say, and there's a dealer that received a 20 quid from the DVLA, they'll just be, and you can see why it's gone down so well. I mean, it's the fact that, I mean, I wouldn't surprise me if some of them have actually framed them for future posterity. It's not the 20 quid. They'll just have it in a little frame on the desk to say, do you know what? All the problems you've caused me over the decades, yeah, I've now got 20 quid out of your bank. I think it deserves it just for that, if I'm honest.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That means a lot.
Fair enough. I won't be a bitter loser. I like your justification for that. Well, all that's left for me to say is thank you, Phil, for judging today. It's been lovely to have you on, as ever. And thank you for your continued insight into the market. It's always nice to have, you know, someone other than us that comes on and talks some sense while we talk absolute nonsense.
Or someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys, as always.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you as well to James for competing. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we've mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk where you'll find those and much more news besides. Thanks again. And until next time, goodbye.